Good afternoon, everyone. Yeah, long time no see. It's been like 2 hours. All right, so this evening I mentioned on Wednesday night what I intend to do for our sermon is something a little bit different than I normally do. Y'all know what I normally do by now. Instead, I want to give you just a little bit of insight. I've been preaching full-time for officially now 10 years. And that's a weird thing to say and think about. Been married for 12 and preaching full-time for 10, officially. I graduated high school in 2006, if that will help you at all. And then I worked at the local movie theater, YRC, or York River Crossing Cinemas, for a full year full-time to be able to save up a little bit of money. That was gone within a month of me moving. And then Melissa and I got married on June 30th, 2007. We waited, I think it was officially 30 days or 1 month, and then we moved in our little Toyota Corolla that leaked oil all over the place and was on its last legs as a used car anyway, to Memphis, Tennessee, and we began preaching school. And somehow we made it through together. Things were interesting while we were there. We were promised $150 a month in pledge support from local congregations. Our bills were a lot more than that, to say the least, and so we went with a prayer and the hope that if we did this, God would take care of us, and we're still here. So we learn very, very quickly that trusting in Him, you know, works. That's obviously the case. I was fortunate enough to talk to one of our directors or the director there and say, I don't have enough support. Is there anywhere I can preach on Sundays to earn a little extra to help pay for food or something? And there was a place that they hosted a preacher and his wife to come, and you would preach this little country congregation on Sunday. You'd do their Bible class, the sermon, and then you'd stay until 5 and do the evening service. So I took a nap every single Sunday in the pews. And then also about 6 months into it, I realized we drove past a place called Ripley, Tennessee, where there was a church that gave us a check every month of support. So one night we stopped in, and the preacher was out of town, so they asked me to preach. And then they said, well, if, you know, we have a 6 o'clock service, so if you can come and preach in the morning and then preach in the evening at Antioch, where I was in the country congregation, if you can come and do it again in the evening for us, that would make us feel good. So I go, absolutely. So I preach 3 times a Sunday, and that was an hour and a half commute one way every single Sunday. And I would go by the chapel and load up a duffel bag full of these song books, because the song books they had at the other church, I didn't know any of those songs. And so it was an early morning of getting the song books and borrowing them without permission, and then driving an hour and a half north to Antioch and Halls, Tennessee, and then preaching and then sleeping, then preaching, then going to Ripley and preaching and going back by the chapel and dropping off all the books before anyone knew that they were missing, and then waking up bright and early on Monday to go to class. And you just do that every single week, and that was for 2 years. And so I distinctly remember my very first interview for a church. They said, do you think you have enough time in the week to prepare for a Bible class, a Sunday morning sermon, Sunday night sermon, and a Wednesday night class? I go, do I have more than just Saturday to prepare for it? And they say, yeah, you have all week. And I go, I'll be perfect then, because I only have Saturdays to myself to prepare all of that for what I've been doing for the last 2 years. And so grew a lot. Obviously, matured a lot. It's an 18-year-old kid, newlywed, moving out. And so that was my very first work in Charlestown, West Virginia. 2 years after that was July 1st, 2009, was my very first office day as a full-time preacher. The day before our anniversary, we moved into the house, the preacher's house, there in West Virginia. And then 6.5 years later, we moved here. So you can kind of track my career pretty easily just by looking at those figures. And so this sermon is designed around the idea of 10 things that I have learned the hard way by preaching for 10 years. Again, 10 things, kind of rapid pace. Some have verses, most do not. I'll tell you a quick little story and then we'll move forward. Okay, the very first thing that popped into my head that I've learned, especially the hard way, is I need to be more patient with people. I distinctly remember all the trouble that I got into when I first got to my first work, and most of it revolved around the idea of what I thought other people needed to be doing, and they weren't doing it, and I was there to help them find the way. So naive is pretty close to the right word of what I thought I was. 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 9, "The Lord is not slack concerning his promise towards us, as some count slackness, but is long-suffering towards us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance." 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4, "Love is patient, love is kind." And so that even applies to preachers, believe it or not. And so I think I've gotten better over the years of understanding more about where people are and where they're coming from and troubles or stressors that I may have dismissed out of my ignorance in previous years. Now I understand a little bit better. So I try to give the benefit of the doubt whenever I can when it comes to someone who is not progressing the way that I think they should be progressing, as if that's my job entirely. So that was a very, very good lesson to finally figure out and to hopefully apply more as my ministry continues. Second, friendship is vital. Now, I'm not sure how you understand a preacher to be when it comes to a social encounter or the environment of just being around one, but it's sometimes very difficult to make friends with the people that you preach for. Because I know, especially at first, I felt like I had to be this model, I had to be this person that they needed to look up to and all of that nonsense. Friendship with a preacher is possible, I'm telling you right now. Most of you are not surprised by this because I've got more friends here than I've ever had in my life. And so friendship not only is vital for you to be able to relate to me as someone you hear a lot from throughout the week, but also I need friends. Melissa needs friends. Our kids need friends. And that's not a problem here at all. But it was difficult at first, for sure, to be able to figure out that I needed friends in the congregation and in the world to be able to have a relationship with folks that are out there. And that kind of segues into the third thing. Trusting people is hard, but necessary. What I mean by that is we're all fallible. We all make mistakes. And we're not always perfect judges of people's intentions or characters. And sometimes you just don't know who a person is or what they're all about until you open up to them and trust them with something. And there have been a couple of occasions across the years where I've opened up and told people things, and Melissa has as well, and that trust was violated, unfortunately. That's why making friends is so important, because you get to know people and you trust them and you love them. But some folks, for whatever reason, they violate that trust and it breaks your heart. And so the two responses from that, either they violate your trust and they say things that are untrue about you or whatever the case may be, and you say, well, enough of that, you're not going to hurt me again, so you don't trust anybody else, which is my default mode previously. Or you say, you know what, they're human, I'm human, a mistake was made, and we should grow from it and mature from it. And just know that's a risk that comes with trusting people. Sometimes that trust can be violated. So that's a very, very important lesson that I've learned across the years of preaching is, you know, you hope that everyone has your best intentions and heart, and sometimes this is not the case. And so I remember a conversation with a certain secretary when I was here for my first week. And we're talking about something, and she said, "Do you remember when I said this to you?" And I go, "Yeah, I had the proof right." It would approve to someone what I said or didn't say. And she goes, "Okay." That was a very nice way to say something happened to you where you had to prove what you said or didn't say. And that's exactly what happened. I had a lot of folks that would say, no, you never told me this. And I'd have to break out the proof. So trusting people is hard, but absolutely necessary. This next one is a little bit different. Doctrinal challenge equals growth. And what I mean by that is, you probably heard it this morning in my Bible class if you were here. I gave you a presentation of what I was taught was the truth about the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. And I gave you that as one thing that is believed. But instead of saying, this is the truth and there's no other truth except for this, don't you dare challenge me or you're wrong, which I could have said, I suppose, I said, here are some verses. I want you to figure it out for yourself. I know where I am on it, but I want you to be able to examine it yourself and believe what you believe, not because some preacher told you, but because that's what you think the truth actually is. And that's a very long form way to say that if you don't challenge the teachings that you've always heard or the assumptions that you've always had, you never really know if what you believe is really what you believe or if it's an inherited belief system. And so I'm not saying that we need to change the old past or any of that. I'm just saying that challenging what you think might be the status quo or the rhetoric that you've always heard, at least understanding a bit more about why that's the truth, can be very, very helpful to, big picture, get closer to God. Not just to cling to the doctrine, but to know the person who gave you the teaching a bit better. So that one's been a good thing for me over the years, is to investigate really why we do things the way we do and so on. Next one, it's one of my favorites. The golden rule always applies. That's personal to me because I can understand why the golden rule would make sense to someone who's not a believer, because you want to influence them and be a good example and be a light shining into the world, reflecting our Father's love. But it also is just as important when it comes to church members. You should treat them the way that you would like to be treated. It even applies when it comes to your spouse. I want Melissa to treat me a certain way. I better treat her a certain way. That's the idea. She can stand up for herself, and y'all know it by now. Same thing with the kids. I mean, as the kids. That's a weird thing to say out loud. You know, as they grow up, I know kids mature and there's difficulty ahead, and I'm going to do my best to try to remember that rule for myself and to be the person that Christ would have me to be by using the golden rule. Number six, as we're moving down our list, is one that was given to us day one in preaching school. It said, balance your time. And I didn't know what that meant when I didn't have any kids. I was a newlywed. I wasn't in local work yet. And my day was not completely filled with things to do every single hour. The older I've gotten, the more things I have to accomplish throughout the week, the more I understand it's very, very easy to just go full steam into one category of my world and neglect everything else. And so finally, I kind of get a picture of what they mean. They mean step back from your schedule and make sure everybody in your life that's important to you has a place, that you're not just so focused on the work you neglect your family, or so focused on your family you neglect your actual responsibilities as a preacher. And so there's a balance there of all the things we have to do, and find that balance has been very helpful to me over the last couple of years for sure. Number seven, if there were ever one, this is it. Mental health is not to be neglected. A couple of you know that I've had some problems with depression and anxiety before, and I thought for about a decade that the way that I can fix this is just, no, it's not that important, just kind of get busy, and it doesn't matter, it'll just go away. That's not how that stuff works. What I was doing was, if someone would emotionally hurt me, or if I felt emotionally vulnerable, I would just say, well, that's not important, so just keep on going. And that tough outer shell is great in some situations. You need to be resilient as a preacher, as a Christian. Thick skin is good. However, thick skin to the point of being emotionally crippled is not what is most effective. And so, especially for the last year, I have been giving more attention to my mental well-being, my mood, my past, all the things that I've been neglecting in my adulthood. And ever since investigating a bit further how to better process emotions, that's a real thing, I've been much more happy and been more present for my family and for the kids and for you, if you've been paying attention through my sermons. This has been a reoccurring theme, right? So this is where that's coming from. Mental health is not to be neglected. So, for example, the sermon about how we in a healthy way deal with our past, our present, and our future, that's one of those lessons that I was neglecting. If I just focus on all the mistakes of my past, I can't move forward. If I'm always in dreamland of what could be and so full of anxiety and worry, I'm not present. But if I'm so focused about right here and right now and neglect my responsibilities, there is a healthy and unhealthy way to deal with time. And that's where that sermon came from, was me reflecting on how I used to deal with time versus how I shoot for it now. Okay. Number 8, comparison is the thief of joy. So, preachers usually have a specialty, I've noticed. There's like one or two things that they're really good at doing. And the problem for me when I first started was I had an image of what a preacher was, and he wasn't really a preacher, he was more of a politician. And I felt like if I can't be comfortable being a politician and kissing all the babies and shaking all the hands and being smiley all the time, I'm not fit to be a preacher. That's not me. You should know me well enough to know I'm not the happy, smiley, sunshine guy in the room, obviously. But I have certain things that I am good at, and I try to use those for the glory of God. Doesn't make me less than. Doesn't make me inferior to folks that have other skills, other attributes. That took me a while to figure out. I think I was 4 years into preaching before I realized, you know, I'm not just a sham. I'm not just an imposter. I actually am a preacher who has different skills and emotions and introversions than others, and I can use those and leverage them for God's glory. Okay, number 9. Enjoy the little moments. Time is not getting any slower in my world. I remember before Maddie was born, we were over in the quote-unquote teen class, and I pulled Eddie aside afterwards, Big Eddie, and I said, Eddie, listen, let me ask you, does it ever get slower? Does it ever slow down? Because time right now seems to be flying by, like every day is like a year. Does it ever kind of get back from that? And he goes, no. It gets worse. And so that little lesson of knowing how fluid time is, how quickly it goes by, and just being able to, in the moment, appreciate certain things and enjoy them while they're there, and then be able to be strong enough to let go for change. That's been a great lesson I've learned. We've got this little girl somewhere, and every single day, something happens. There she is. Every single day, she does something hilarious and equally frustrating. And the frustration is there, no doubt about it, as a 2-year-old. But then just these little moments of her running over and saying, hug. And I give her a hug, and she pats my back and says, I love you. And then she goes, bye. And she runs off and destroys something. Those little moments, they mean way more than they used to in my world. So that's a good lesson, I think, for myself. And then finally, number 10. This kind of piggybacks into the idea of me continuing my education through Heritage Christian University in Florence, Alabama. But there is always more to learn. That one was kind of difficult to figure out. I remember when I first got to local work, I was pretty confident I knew all the important answers. Like, I know enough. You know, I've been through 2 years of the gauntlet. I've been quizzed on everything. I know plenty to help the world get to heaven. And then the more people I met and the more questions I was asked and the more things I was asked to give my thoughts on, the more I realized absolutely how ignorant I am about most things. And so learning never ends. The moment I think I know enough is the moment I know nothing when it comes to that topic. So that's been a good lesson for me, is to continue to read, to learn, to listen, and to dive a little bit deeper into what God would have us to know. And so those are 10 little things. You know, some are relevant to you, maybe, some are not. But there are things that I've been thinking about for a while, that I've learned, lessons that I've learned the hard way, and maybe you can be encouraged by hearing some of my immature thinking if you progress beyond my age and learn some things along the way. Can't wait for year 25 to come where I've got 25 things I've learned and 25 years of preaching. We'll have to have an hour for that one. So anyway, tonight, that's our sermon. Hopefully it's encouraging to you a little bit to get to know me a little bit better and what I've learned in these last 10 years. If anyone has a need to respond to the invitation this evening, if we can assist you in any kind of way, we can encourage you, pray for you, lift you up in any kind of way, respond by coming forward now as we start.